The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 3 minutes past nine, Friday the 25th of August 2023, and you're very welcome along to the last 9 till noon show of the week. And I'll introduce our Friday panel to you very shortly, but just to invite you to get involved in the conversation as well as the hour wears on. 086 60 25,000 is how you text or WhatsApp the show. And if you want to give us a call, it's 07491 25,000, and your emails comments at highlandradio.com. And of course you can watch the program and interact with our panel on social media. Go to YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. You can watch on your smart TV, your Fire Stick or your laptop, tablet, whichever device you might have. And we're also on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport. And there is even a watch link, watch live link on our website. So literally no excuses not to be involved. Okay, shall we say good morning to our guests? Why not? Cathy Donaghy's a journalist and author of Finding My Wild. Good morning to you, Cathy. How are you doing?
Great, Greg. Thanks for having me on. I'm in good company this morning, I see.
It's great to have you back on, Cathy. Joseph McBride's a teacher and co-author of Power and People, Leaving Cert Politics and Society. Good morning to you, Joseph.
Good morning, Greg. Pleasure to be on.
I'm not sure if you being booked for today is an amazing producer by Caroline, or just a wonderful coincidence with your writing about the Leaving Cert and being a teacher and what have you. And last but certainly not least, the legend that is John McAteer, editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune newspaper. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks so much for joining us. Lots to get through today, but of course, it's a big day for many students today, and for many of them, it's probably going to be seen as the most important day of their young lives so far. I never presume people did their leaving. I didn't do mine, but Joe, did you do your leaving? Of course you did. And what are your memories of that day?
Yeah, it's all sorts going through your mind going in that morning to get the results. I suppose now they get it online, so it's different. And that I suppose it's nicer that they can do it their own way and get it maybe with their family around them, or maybe some of them might want to do it in their own and look at it first. But whenever I did it back in 04, it was, you went into the school and you kind of already had an indication from the principal handing you the brown envelope, whether you had done well or not, but by the smile or lack of on the face for some people. So it was very daunting. And look, it can be a difficult day for, unfortunately, for some people. And it can be all sorts of emotions. It can be, an ecstatic day for others. And that's the system we're in. And
we're in a better position now, though, aren't we, in that there are more options than ever? Because I know, and we are all very well-intended when we say, it seems like so important now, but as the years wear on, it'll, you put it into a certain context. But that being said, it is the day that's in it, and it doesn't matter what we say, really. It's going to be a tough day or a wonderful day, and it's really, subjective. But I think there genuinely is a greater understanding now of that, people can progress in different ways. The government has, I think, made great inroads in platforming and offering other platforms to third level. So it is different now to your time, is it? Or is it? Sorry, it's a question, Joseph.
I think it is and it isn't, Greg. There are definitely, the Leaving Cert is not the be-all and end-all, and I think students realise that. But it's that realisation doesn't really hit home, I think, until they get the results nearly and until they think of plan Bs, if they have to go that route, and they think of alternate routes, and there's a lot open there. But it still is the only show in town, unfortunately. And I'd be an advocate of reform, of serious reform of the second level education system. I think we're doing a disservice to thousands of students across the country, and thousands today, already that 61,000 getting results today. Many of them, this isn't the route for them, and it isn't. They might never use their Leaving Cert. That's the reality. We don't have, I think we need to move down the road of a two-tier system and at an earlier intervention, even from junior cycle onwards, that there'd be two pathways, one heading the academic route into university and another into the trades. And
is that not, that's not what Leaving Cert applied is then though, no?
It is, but I feel that it's overdue an overhaul. It is very good when the resources are put into it, but as you know...
Can we be confident, though, post-intercert, I can't even remember what it's called now. What's it called now? The exam when you're 14 or 15? What's that called again?
Yeah, junior cycle.
But I mean, like, is that not too early to decide whether or not you want to go down the academic route or go down a route that's more geared towards trades? You know what I mean? Do you not require a level of maturity that maybe has not arrived yet to make such a huge decision?
I personally don't think so. I can see it teaching in school myself that there are students that are clearly not interested whatsoever in.
But is it not the role of but it's not the role of teachers to sort of try and change that, to inspire,
Of course, yeah. You can do so much, but you know, you can take, as the old saying goes, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make a drink. And I think there's some students who are talented, very, very talented in other areas. Like, they'll even say tests, one form of intelligence, really. It's pure rote memory learning, and that isn't for everyone. There's multiple intelligence out there and skills.
We'll talk a little bit about maybe a bit of reform and marking, but I want to bring our other guests in as well. Kathy, I mean, what's your recollections of this day? I mean, as I say, I stopped quite some time ago interviewing the person, and fair play to them, but you know, the one person that gets, you know, the top results and everything, because I don't think that's really, you know, I think that makes it more difficult for others, and they can be celebrated in different ways on social media and what have you. I'm not sure it's just a fantastic way of route to go down. But anyway, what's your views on today, maybe compared to when you did your leaving, etc.?
I wish it had changed more, I think. You know, I remember this day is sort of ingrained in my head. I remember myself and my best friend with our mums went out over Drung Hill out to Carndonagh Community School and into the office where Father McKenna was sitting with envelopes. And all I wanted to see was had I passed maths, because I knew I wasn't getting out of school unless I'd passed maths, and I was hopelessly poor at that. You know, I had some subjects that I was good at, but maths was my Achilles heel. And you can't pass a leaving cert without maths. So, you know, for me, it was such a stressor. And I did want to go on to university and study English. But I felt that it was a passport, and it was, looking back, it's not the journey, it's not the be all and the end all. But when you're 17, 18 years old, and everybody's, you know, and this whole race, the points race, that I think has been put on this pedestal with people getting the perfect points, I think that is the biggest load of rubbish ever. You know, kids, it's like comparing apples and oranges with stones. You know, kids are so different, they're unique. And I hate this idea that you have to perform and you have to get all these points. I wish that there was a fairer system that rewarded creativity, that saw the brilliance of someone's, you know, mimicry, or they were a brilliant actor, or there were things that really showed the potential of kids. This is a rote learning. If you're a good sponge, lots of people are, don't mean to take away, there's brilliant kids out there, and that's the only measure we have, but it is not the complete measure of who you are, right? And that's what I'd like to say to parents today of kids. You know, there are other routes into education. You will, and your child will find their path. There's something for everybody. And, you know, as far back as, 2015, the OECD looked at the stressors on young people, and they found that the Irish education system was one of the most stressful, that the kids worried themselves sick about exams. They worried what would happen if they failed. 50% of them were worried about what would happen if they failed. So I think this whole system, this colossus of the Irish education system, which is the Leaving Cert, is in bad need of reform. We've been talking about reform for so long. What reform looks like, maybe it is more continuous assessment. Maybe it is more pathways to learning that allow kids to shine, that aren't the academic points-driven kids.
And if we went down that route, okay, because there are people listening that will go, you know, it's a test. And it tests you as to your ability and to your capability to go into nursing, to go into healthcare, to go into science or whatever. And you have to have a test have you any concerns that if we were to sort of try and water it down or make it more along the lines that you talk of, that we could maybe drop down in international levels as to, you know, the quality of the output of students?
I guess we have to be careful about that. And I think a lot of the university bosses are coming out, you know, just today and yesterday, and they're talking about how we need to keep a certain standard. And of course you do. You know, if you're going into an area like medicine, you know, you have to have people who are, you know, they're getting high grades in the likes of their chemistry or their physics or their biology. But at the same time, and that's where, you know, we also need to talk to the human person. What about more, you know, interview based, you know, assessments? And what is the round picture? I don't have the answer. Like, there are the top brains in education are looking at how the system would be reformed. But I know the student bodies would say that it's really letting a lot of kids down. And today, you know, there'd be great celebration. And I hope that, you know, it's a safe, wonderful day for young people, but there'd be a lot of people disappointed. And I would just like to say, you know, it's not, this day is not the be all and the end all. There is something for everybody. There is a pathway for you to do what you want to do.
And also, though, to recognise, and I think I'm correct in saying that there are students that will, that have the ability to get points for certain courses at the very, very highest level, but they might miss out because there are others who maybe are behind them that through point inflation will end up getting those positions. So, but we'll tease that out a little bit in a moment. I just want your views on this, John McAteer.
It's an important day, of course, for those 61,000 students, but as Cathy there says, it's not the be-all and the end-all. Whether there's reform needed to the Leaving Cert, I think I've been listening to that for at least 50 years. It doesn't change whatsoever. For those in the education system, they never had a better chance in life. There was never more opportunities to learn. There was never more opportunities to find employment in Ireland, yet there was never more students wanting to leave. So there's huge contradictions and there's huge issues there. The idea of getting into third level is a given for literally every student in the whole country. You have a university status here in Letterkenny. You don't have to leave home to study at that level. But there will be good results and there will be results that may be a bit of a disappointment. That shouldn't really matter in the slightest. Our education system is probably one of the better ones in the EU. And it's basically at the end of the day down to the students' own ability to relate to what they've been doing at secondary school for the past 4, 5, or 6 years. They're leaving secondary school now with much more experience, much more knowledge of life. Some of them are already even parents, so we should be giving them a vote even at that point, you know, long before it probably. But at the end of the day, all we can do is just wish the students well in whatever course they decide that they want to take in life, and we hope that they get those results this morning.
What about Joseph's suggestion of maybe a fork in the road earlier in the education in second level, where people who perhaps might be better suited to a... Because it's almost set up now as everyone's going to work in IT or everyone's going to work in one particular field or other. We've never had as big a demand on people with skills and trades as we have now. And maybe we should be starting earlier to harness the skills that are out there earlier in the second level cycle.
You had that when you had standalone vocational schools. You've done marvellous work and directed people towards those skills and towards those trades, and we had never more demand. IT is going to be a very, very important one. So is plastering and plumbing and motor engineering and all of those things. And as Joseph there said, we should be directing them probably at the end of their second year. There should be assessments done there to see where your natural talent and your natural ability lies. Is it academic or is it more towards skills?
I know lots of young people, John, and I'm sure we all do. I know lots of young people that realise they need to get a Leaving Cert for their options, but they just can't. They're skipping transition year. They just can't get it out of the way quick enough because they want to work on the family farm or in the family business, or they want to go on an apprenticeship for their trade and all. And they're literally just trying to get the Leaving Cert out of the way as quickly as they can, just to have that in the bag.
But that's all right too, you know.
Yeah,
you know, because there are opportunities in agriculture like there never were before. There are issues around climate change that they will have to learn about and that they will have to cope with and that they will have to focus on down the years. So there's going to be new skills and new demands coming down their way. But along with that, there's going to be coming a huge amount of new opportunities as well. But the Leaving Cert will need to be reformed. The whole idea of just re-examining it from at a root branch level. At what stage should you be looking at that, even at national school? I don't know because I'm not a teacher, thankfully.
Yeah, well, we do have a teacher with us. Joseph, what are the implications of the inflated grades. It's happening again this year, perhaps even next year as well. Just your views in relation to that and where it impacts most in a negative way, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose it's just one of those unfortunate side effects of the COVID pandemic, that you had to cater, you know, and make accommodations for the students, particularly this year's group cohort, who didn't sit a junior cert and didn't sit a state exam before their leaving cert. So I can understand why the minister had to make a decision there to I suppose bring them up in line with previous years. But it's kind of like a snowball effect. Once it starts, very hard to stop. And it's the knock-on effect. I think this year, you know, the minister had said that they would be they would not be disadvantaged in comparison to last year's students, and that she hoped it wouldn't increase, the rate of inflation would increase. But from what I could read into it this morning, there's 71% of grades have increased this year, and that's up from 50% last year. The average increase has been 7.9% across all subjects, so some subjects higher increases than others. But that has a knock-on effect on an already very pressurised CO system, trying to sort them into third level. And I know, as Cathy mentioned, like the universities are coming out strongly now on this in the last couple of days about, you know, the impact it's having on them. Like, you have students, we've had students who got 600 points in their leaving cert and didn't get the course they want. Like, you know, it's bananas when you think of it. Like, doing everything right, every single thing that was asked of them, they did. And then it was oversubscribed, and a university has to go to a lottery system. I think universities, though, need to look at themselves too. They can't just blame the inflated grades and the education system or the CO system. They're kind of, maybe they need to look at themselves and their own admissions policies, and they need to look at maybe like the idea of doing interviews. You know, if you look at, I would give references for students who are doing the UK system through UCAS, and a lot of them, they're not as focused on the grades. You know, there are grades they need, yes, but they're nearly more nervous about the interview and other aspects that show on competency tests. And I think our universities need to really grasp that mettle and need to go that route to make sure they're getting the right fit. And as they say, the dropout rate, I think, has gone up from 7% in 2020 to 15%, which is a big increase, you know, over a double of an increase. Mm-hmm. Now, it is broadly aligned with what's going on across Europe as a result of the COVID pandemic too, but it's multifaceted approaches.
I hate the way we tend to, and I'm not saying you do, we do as a nation tend to sort of justify our failings by saying, well, they're also making the same mistakes in Europe. It would be great, like, in different areas, if we could sort of not, you know, be different, be the ones that see change. And Cathy, you know, you talked about which I get a sense that you can actually put yourself back in the teenager Cathy on that day when you got that results, but to have to go through that, but then achieve what you were hoping to achieve, but still miss out, it must be devastating for today's students.
I think you're right, Greg, and you know, that's what's kind of so devastating about it, is you do everything right. As Joe says, you've done, you know, the perfect leaving cert, you've got the points, but you're not going to get your choice. And at the root of this, what you have then is a young person believing, I have failed, I have not got what I wanted. So you're starting your next route into education feeling like a failure. You know, the whole thing is almost designed to mess your head up, you know, the whole leaving cert. I would feel that as well, though, you know, we are maybe setting students up to fail, because you've got all this pressure for courses. The points have become inflated, and some universities are now going to random selection, like a lottery to get into university. So you might get a university place that perhaps, you know, is not the place for you. It's just, you're reaching too high for that particular course. So then, you know, you drop out and you go back home and you feel like, I have failed. You know, well, there has to be more of a pastoral role for universities here. And the big jump from second level, as Joe would know, to go into university, where you're on your own. There is no teacher saying, come here, have you got your homework done today? Could you not have done better there? Or, you know, we all had great teachers. I had the most amazing English teacher, you know, in Carndonagh Community School, who actually encouraged me to write from, you know, and Miss Donnelly, what do you think about this? And wanted my opinion. And you know, all of us had brilliant teachers, right? But we are setting these young people up to just believe that this is all me. I have done something wrong here. by finding that they go into a course that's not for them, it's unsuited to them. And then they feel like, you know, it's not worked out. My whole university experience is marred. What am I going to do now? And it really is, we really have to get behind students. And I think the universities, Joe, you made a good point. I think that universities really need to look after students a bit more, because you go into this melting pot and you're
on your own. You know, Cathy, it's funny, you know? I mean, Joe's suggestion is a good one. I never really thought about it, but I kind of thought that was a given, that that's how we might do things, or you know what I mean, that there is some curation or... But anyway, as I say, it's just, it's obvious that it doesn't happen, but I never thought about it. You'd presume it would, because it makes so much sense. Stay with us, because we've got an awful lot to get through. And you're hearing the voice of John McAteer, Cathy Donaghy and Joseph McBride. We'll be back with more from them and your comments as they come in this morning as well too, of course, after a quick break. Now, the Irish Navy is so understaffed at the moment that only two vessels are available to police Irish waters. The Naval Service acts as the official agency with responsibility for the operation of Ireland's Fisheries Monitoring Centre. There's around 400 fishing vessels out at sea in our waters daily. Of course, we should also bear in mind that the policing of inshore fishers is incredibly well resourced, with regular checks, people on the shoreline with... binoculars, there's drones up in the air, night vision goggles, all regularly employed there. Is it fair there could effectively be a free-for-all out at sea while smaller operators face such scrutiny? We're going to return to this next week, but just wondering if you have a quick view on this. John McAteer, I'll start with you. I mean, if I were an inshore fisherman and I'm left with what's left of these floating factories decimating the seas, I'd feel very hard done by to realise that the international waters, or the our waters that are fished by the international fleets, aren't really being policed at the moment.
See, the reality always has been that the Navy has been under strength. It's a poor career financially. Advancement is just non-existent, and as you say, there are only two vessels at the moment, and we have a fairly long coastline. The big issue for many people will be the arrival of drugs, as happened here in a bundle in Fannet not all that long ago, and another one over at Dunfanaghy. God knows how many other bundles arrived elsewhere that were already recaptured. The Navy as a career is not seen as a good option. And until that is beefed up, until proper salaries and promotional opportunities are provided, as far as inshore people are concerned, of course they have a gripe. But this is a matter for government. Always has been, going back down the years. People will join the Navy. There's a splurge of advertising that makes it look very attractive, is that you're probably going to sail the world and get the most exotic holidays in South Vietnam or somewhere like that. But the reality is that you're probably stuck in Hull Bowling for half the year or a lot longer, and you're not going to see at all because there aren't enough officers to crew the ship.
Well, at least now there's a bit of honesty to it, because I remember it must be 6, 7, 8 years ago talking to people involved in the Navy. And they were saying, you know, such and such a boat's been tied up for the last 6 months, and they say it's in to get service. But, you know, bottom line is we don't actually have the staff to take the boat out. At least now, or the vessels out, at least now we're having the proper conversation out in public that the reason there's only two out there is because there's not enough staff to put any more out.
We can't do anything very, very well in this country from that point of view. If you're watching the prime time last night, a guard that had left the force, it was going to take 45 minutes to put a case on the pulse system, and they might have 20, 30 cases for the night, so they had to stop early and get back. We just don't seem to get a handle on the technology that's needed there. We don't seem to have a handle on the number of personnel that are needed in places like the Gardaí, the Navy, and indeed the Army. People no longer see it as a very attractive career to go elsewhere, and the government seems quite satisfied to let other nations, particularly NATO, the United States, look after our waters. And that's the bottom line, you know.
Yeah, and of course, too, a lot of people just use it as a springboard to another job, that they enter the Navy, get up to a certain level, and then go into the private sector where they're much better rewarded. Cathy, I mean, you know, maybe we land lovers don't take really the security of the waters as seriously as we might. Of course, I did focus on, you know, in terms of fishing policing, because just that that irony of the life of an inshore fisher versus an international. I just thought it that worth mentioning. But as John mentioned, in terms of drugs arriving to our shores, a busy active Navy off our coasts, it's important for the security that maybe we don't always see.
I think you're right, and I think there's the element of visibility about it as well, Greg. You know that if we are seen to have a strong force, keeping an eye on things. But I think what's happened in recent years is, occupations like the Navy have been devalued kind of in society. They've been let sort of go to seed a bit, and there hasn't been that visibility. And perhaps if we do have a campaign, and maybe today is the day to be talking about it when we see the Leaving Certs come out, perhaps careers like this, could be seen as viable options for people if investment was put in and that it was seen as something that, a young man or a young woman could do, but not to, move on. There needs to be some kind of a lifelong, learning approach. There needs to be, this is a career option. This can take you from now until your retirement. And I don't think that people would see it as that, giving them that kind of longevity. So what's wrong? What are we doing wrong there? And perhaps the government really does need to look at how we value this as a profession, as it was, I think, in the past, very much so,
Yeah, and Joseph, too, you could extend it out to our attitude to a lot of jobs. I'm going to throw teaching in there. We're teachers aren't taking up jobs in Dublin because they're not getting paid enough to even be able to live there. But it's not just a Dublin issue. It's right across the country. Gardaí, we can't retain or recruit Gardaí at the numbers that is required. There's this issue with the Navy. There's the same issue with nursing. We're kind of shooting ourselves in our own foot because an awful lot of the problems are of our own making, because people are choosing a lot of these careers, but they're not choosing them here. They're choosing them somewhere else because they'll feel rewarded, if they're in a different country. So it's kind of right across the board when you take a step back and have a look at it, Joe.
Yeah, it is. I think it's how you promote the various occupations too, and it's how it's sold to young people. But probably the common denominator with a lot of people who are particularly in teaching and nursing and other occupations that are leaving the country is the housing crisis. I think that's a huge problem, because there's the knock-on effect into the rental market, and someone just fresh out of college is going to rent for the first number of years. And especially in Dublin, it's just not possible. And you wouldn't blame them for going overseas where they can get a tax-free salary and have accommodation sorted in advance for you. So it's a major problem. Like, I think the housing crisis is at the core of a lot of these problems. In relation to the defence forces, it's a very noble occupation. It's a vocation, really. And I think Cathy's right.
Well, that's the problem,
Yeah.
Because it's not a vocation at all, Joseph. Neither is teaching, neither is nursing, neither is the guards. But unfortunately, I think you're right, and you're a teacher. But my point is that I think sometimes the powers that be exploit the fact that people see it as a vocation. So I'm not saying you're wrong in saying that. And sure, look, you're following your vocation, but we can't exploit the fact that for many it's a vocation. And I think that does go on.
Yeah, look, you have to treat people and put the real value on the jobs that they're providing. And I think at the minute we're only spending 0.2% on our defence budget, which is the lowest in the EU. It's been rock bottom for years. So to have a functioning Navy is going to cost, it's going to take investment. Yeah. And I think that debate has to happen, particularly when we're trying to protect our neutrality.
But that really is an issue. And John, this is where if I were in the Army or the Navy now, I'd be worrying, because it's not going to be decoupled from the neutrality question, the NATO question, is it? You know what I mean? It'd be really hard now to be arguing for a review of defence spending, because instantly it's going to feed into that wider conversation that's going to make it more challenging to come up with a solution. Or maybe I'm wrong.
Something, the Navy has historically been undermanned, underpaid and undervalued. And every successive Minister for Defence comes up with a whole new idea and a whole new aspiration, and we end up back in the same spot all over again. And at the same time, you're competing alongside much better paid occupations nowadays, and as a consequence, the Navy continues to be diminished. Like, we are going to continue to external sources to look after our security at sea, and there's no doubt about that. And I suppose the Russians are going to come in and give a hand as well. like at the end of the day, I listened to four young students on your show last Friday morning, just talking, going back to the Leaving Cert, that four very vocal and very lucid four students, they had one thing in common. All four of them are leaving Ireland. You know, they're in their teens, late teens probably. Probably some of them have Leaving Cert this morning. None of them are thinking too much of joining the Navy or any other aspect of Irish life because they just can't afford it.
And Cathy, I'm not sure if you, if you heard the four students. You know, it's not that they necessarily, because the question I put to them, it wasn't like, do you want to travel or do you want to see the world or do you want to get life experience and come back? The question was, do you see a future for yourself or do you see that you could achieve your goals in Donegal stroke Ireland? And all four of them, and by coincidence, and I didn't know the views before I asked their question, that question was they didn't see it. So it's a wee bit of hope that's gone. And that's the next generation. That's the future of this country. And that really took me aback, Cathy, that young people don't see a future here.
I think that's a terrible indictment, you know, of our society and what we're doing now, you know. And I think it does come back to, you know, hope. And can we see ourselves? Can young people see themselves having a stake in the future of this country? Can they see their place in it? And many of them can't, you know. And I think Joe's right. Can you look at the figures on getting a house, getting started, and like they're astronomical. How can people feel like they can have a part of something if it's just so out of reach, you know? And that is, there's so many problems to fix before the housing issue is massive. I do think that things are changing, and I do think, you know, there are more options. John said it earlier, you know, there are more options, you know, for young people in Donegal. Like I have two sons, in a few years they're going to be up and out as well. I would love to think,
are they, Cathy? I just kind of get the impression that my boys' hope for home ownership is to live with me until I pop my clogs and then row over it. But before you go on to that point, and maybe this answers it, like obviously the young people are here listening to us. Is there any danger that we are running the country down with our commentary on it? Not us four here.
We're not.
John? Are you sure that we're not? They're not going, well, if my dad or my granddad or my mum or my granny or my auntie thinks this country is so bad, is it as bad as?
It's probably worse, actually, if you were a young person looking in at it. You look at some of those last week were 19, and they speak to a whole host of tens of thousands of other people in a position at school where they're looking to their future, but it's not in Ireland. And what they're talking to here is the failure of the political system to offer them an opportunity to provide a climate that can leave them getting a house here, renting a house that leaves them with money in their pockets rather than high taxation. Mm. When you look just at one basic thing this week, our electricity prices are about 900 euro a year dearer than anywhere else in the EU. You multiply that dozens of times, and where young people need money, it's at this point in their lives.
And what's annoying is there's no reason why our groceries are so expensive compared to Europe or electricity. It's literally just gouging us. But Cathy, I just put the same question to you then, because I mean, John's clear that, you know, it's not that we're running the country, that the young people know what's going on, that is their view. But do you think we talk of the positives enough that, you know,
I don't think we talk about the positives enough. And, you know, I think that, you know, things have changed and moved on in this country. I'm really hopeful, you know, that with good interventions that things can get better for young people. I remember, you know, like doing a Leaving Cert in the 1990s and leaving Donegal, there was nothing. Like there was nothing. Fruit of the Loom had just collapsed. There was absolutely no way I could have thought about, you know, building a life here. You know, things have moved on. You know, we've got, you know, hubs, digital hubs all over the county now. For the first time, I would say that perhaps there is a place for young people to live and work in Donegal that there certainly wasn't when I was leaving here.
And you in know, terms of trades, there is no shortage of quite well-paid trade work in Donegal either. Joseph, you work with young people obviously as well as we all do in different ways and means, but you know, when you do hear a group of students going, I don't believe I have a future here, is that reality or is some of it perception?
I think, I always ask that question to my Leaving Cert class, you know, the final week, and I have noticed a trend where there's now a significant majority saying, no, I'm out of here. And I think there's a sense of, you know, young people obviously want to go away. I remember doing my Leaving Cert and I couldn't wait to get out the door of the house and be gone, you know, and go anywhere. Like, you know, I just wanted to get away. And that's part of it too. But I have found there is, I suppose, it's kind of depressing to think of, but like there is a sense of, yeah, some young people say, like when I break down into it, well, is this, no, everyone wants to get away, but could you see yourself coming back here maybe in 10 years time? And there's an increasing number saying no, if things worked out in Australia or if they head off to wherever they want to go, different parts of the world, that no, I'd be quite happy to stay there for the rest of my life and pop home now and again for a wee holiday, you know. So that, I thought that was just, yeah, it's you know, definitely there's been a step change there in the last few years. And it is, look, yeah, they have, there in many ways, they have way more opportunities. Maybe we do need to sell this place a bit better. I think we do, though. Like, I do think with John, we do kind of highlight it. Donegal is a great place to live. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of Donegal people are quite open and outspoken about it, whether it's on their social media, taking pictures during the summer of the lovely locations to live in. And, you know, with now the advent of high-speed broadband, there's a lot of opportunities to work in this county. So maybe we could plug that a wee bit more. But look, young people are, when they see the high cost of living, there's a sense they feel that they're getting ripped off, you know, compared to anywhere else in the world, and that they can get better.
Yeah, they're tuned in, they're switched on, and they know what's going on. All right. I was just curious of your views on that, because, I mean, maybe it was a question to myself that I put out loud to you guys, if you know what I mean. Okay, back with more from our guests after this break. Stay where you are, back in about 3 minutes. Okay, welcome back to the programme. 55,000 Ukrainians will have a vote in next year's local elections. The right is not new, though. Irish citizenship is not a requirement for voting at local elections. John, do you think it's a correct approach? And do you think it'll impact the outcome of elections here? Because we have quite a percentage of eligible Ukrainians to vote.
Yeah, we have several thousand, maybe 6,000 or 7,000 of them. It has the potential to impact the results. Of course it has. Should they have a vote? Of course, they're living here. Why shouldn't they have a vote? I would be all for that, provided they're registered. How many of them would want to vote here? How many of them are into our kind of local politics? Do they understand it at all? Those are things that would have to be all teased out. Probably beyond that, to a general election, there's a real possibility that they will have a vote. I wouldn't be too sure that we'll have it in time for next June, because after all, it's not that far away. The same argument goes, should 17-year-olds, you have all of these new dimensions coming into our lives, should 17-year-olds have a vote, given that at that age they're much more mature than they were now? And you could just go round and round in circles. But I do believe that where people are resident in the country for a year or thereabouts, and they're bona fide people, there's no reason they shouldn't have a vote. Now, whether or not we can encourage them to go out and vote to fill the potholes in the back of Erica or wherever it is, it's all those local issues that are of prime importance to people voting in local elections. I think the biggest issue that we're going to have in upcoming elections is how do we get people to come out and vote at all? Because it looks very, very much, from talking to a lot of people in politics, that the interest in the body politic itself has diminished greatly in the last 5 or 6 years. The fact that you have a very benign type of three-party government where nobody's ever going to rock the boat and nobody's ever wrong and everybody's totally on message has left people wondering, what in the hell are we doing here? What's gone wrong in this country? We have 65 billion going to be stacked away, and it looks as if it's a big hindrance rather than a help to us. So like, you have all of those issues all in the melting pot there, but you asked the question about should Ukrainians or people like that have a vote. I would say yes, they should.
Yeah, and I don't think, I mean, obviously, everything's weaponized in this day and age, and you will read that people believe that they've been encouraged to come here to skew the outcome of elections and really to be the tipping point to get Ireland into NATO. I mean, if you look at the figures, and you have for many, many years, you look at the figures and you look at how things play out, you would need an awful lot more than, you know, 100,000 to 300,000 people coming into this country to skew things in that regard. Plus, you can never guarantee which way they might vote. You wouldn't subscribe to that, I'm sure, John.
I wouldn't subscribe to that at all. We probably have about 5,000 Ukrainians and other refugees in Donegal. It wouldn't be, it wouldn't have any impact at all, except at a local level. And that would probably pan out in whatever local area that you happen to be based in. You're probably going to be likely know more about your local candidates, let it be up in Inishowen or in Donegal Town or here in Fannet. I think, you know, that involvement is more important, you know, participation is more important than, you know, this conspiracy theory that has become part of various societies, absolutely soul-destroying, as social media is driving it, that, you know, that everything is now a part of NATO and everything is part of a conspiracy theory to create global warming, as if, you know, I've just been talking to a couple of people this week with some of the maddest ideas about a system going on in Austria to add to the global warming.
My brain hasn't woken up sufficiently to even question you on that, Kathy. What do you think? What do you think? Do you have an issue with? And as I say, it's long-standing. It's not something that's been parachuted in now to suit a situation. Do you have any issue with, you know, the 55,000 odd Ukrainians who would have a vote in next year's local elections, and anyone living here that's not an Irish citizen? Do you have any concerns about that?
No, not at all, Greg. I feel that if people are living here, then they should have a stake in their community and if they're in a local area and they can impact change in their local area, then they should do that. From my experience of meeting people from other communities, from outside communities who come into Ireland, they are so engaged. You know, they actually are a lot more engaged than some local people. They know what's going on. They want to be part of society. They want to say, well, here's my heritage. How can I share it with you? Yeah. I think you used the word weaponized there, Greg. And I think that's what's going to happen. That's what we're going to see happening now. And I think it's up to, you know, rational, reasonable people to take this down. Right. You know, I mean, we were the people, you know, if you think about years ago, we were the people who got on ships to leave these shores. Every part of every promontory and rocky outcrop on this island, there are, like, people used to go and light fires as the famine ships sailed off with their loved ones down locks and into the Atlantic Ocean. We cannot forget that we were those people trying for a new start somewhere else. And Irish people built the citadels of this world and did great. And are we saying that they should have had, you know, the shoe on their neck not to let them come up? We need to be welcoming.
Well, the shoe was there. If you speak to people that went to Glasgow
my point is, I suppose, Greg, we cannot forget the Irish experience, okay? And I think that this weaponizing is going to happen and we are going to see it a lot more. And I think that reasonable people have got to remember and tell the stories of who we were and what we did and how we went out into the world. And we need to think of the people coming here. Okay, they're coming here, you know, because, you know, they're hoping to build a new life here. Mm. You know,
it's funny, the figure is 55,000 Ukrainians, because the 55,000 figure, not so long ago, in the last couple of years, it used to be the undocumented Irish in America. And the regular conversations on shows like this was to give them the rights, to allow them to come home for funerals or weddings, and to allow them to pay tax and live their lives there and move in and out of the country. And somewhere along the line, us having conversations about trying to get those rights for Irish people in America were replaced by trying to deny people rights in Ireland. It's just, the world has changed so significantly in such a short window that we've gone from trying to get people illegally in another country recognised and rights to that's not even talked about now. And really, it's almost an awful lot of people discussing about removing people from this country or denying them rights, which I think is just... it's just an awful big change in a really short period of time. Joseph, do you have anything to fear with someone who's not Irish voting? I don't know.
No, not at all. In fact, the opposite. I think it will enhance our democracy and it should be encouraged. And I wholeheartedly agree with John. Like, the participation is what's important. It's how do you get non-nationals to engage with politics? And well clued in as Kathy would be, but it's great to hear that so many non-nationals are interested in what's going on and look, they have fresh perspectives and fresh insights that we can really benefit from. And you only, as you say, in America, like, you only have to look to America, how well the Irish did when they went over there over the centuries. And like, part of that was, yeah, hard work, hard graft, but also it was the right to vote in local state elections. And even when they weren't technically legal in some cases, legal residents, they still had the right to vote until things tightened up in the latter part of the of the 19th and even the 20th century. So, I mean, you know, the Irish vote has had a big impact in several regions within the US, and a positive impact. And now, I'm sure at the time, people in America were saying, oh, should we give these Irish people the right to vote? Or what, you know, they had all sorts of fears and different superstitions and conspiracy theories. And today, we're celebrated over there for the great contribution we've made to American society. So I think we need to look at our history, and we should be encouraging this. And anyone who's living in a country, in my opinion, for a decent period of time, about a year, I think, as John said, I'd agree with that. I think that should definitely, you know, there's no taxation without representation was the Sons of Liberty slogan in America. So they're working, they're paying their taxes, and they should be entitled to be represented.
Which is kind of funny, because that's a direct quote from one of our students last Friday on the conversation of whether 16 and 17-year-olds should be able to vote. You know, no taxation without representation, or representation because of taxation. And Kathy, I get the impression from you that you think it's time that the maybe silent majority spoke up a bit. Is that what you were sort of getting at there, Kathy, in terms of some of these issues that are being played out on social media platforms, which I find are becoming increasingly places I avoid?
Yeah, I think so, Greg. You know, and what you do hear is that the loudest voices are not always the most reasonable ones either. And on social media, I mean, you dare to put your head above the parapet to try and put, you know, an alternative view, or to put some of these things out there, you will be shot down. So I hope that Elon Musk does not remove the block button, because I'll be in a bit of bother if he does. But
yeah, well, you know, that's going to happen, but.
Yeah,
I just think it's going to depopulate the space, because you know, and so he could be. And the thing is, the reason he's doing it is because I keep blocking advertisers, and I'm not saying it's my fault, but I'm kind of normal. And if I keep
he's got to get his money back.
If I keep pushing certain types of blocking certain types of ads, everyone else is doing it too. Kathy, lovely to have you on the program again. Thanks so much for accepting the invite, and hopefully we'll chat again soon. Kathy Donaghy, journalist and author of Finding My Wild. Joseph McBride's a teacher and co-author of Power and People: Leaving Cert Politics and Society. Thank you so much for your time, Joe. Really appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Greg. Have a great weekend ahead.
You too. You're all prepping for next week, presumably.
Yeah, you've done me a favour here. I was able to dodge a meeting there. So
we'll get back into it. It's not too late.
Get back at it now and catch up for last time.
And John, always a pleasure. You know that yourself.
Of course I do. Thank you very much, Greg.
Thank you. Take care, John. We'll be back with more after the news and obituary notices.